And we are live. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room already tonight. And this is a very special report. We're going to be doing about 90 minutes for you tonight to really cover the incredible, insane things that have been going on this week. And we're not going to be taking questions. We don't have the lovely Olivia with us, but we do have a Groovy Bean out there in the ideas room running the show. And it's great to have so many familiar faces out there. You know, we're doing this kind of emergency powers theme because so many of the different situations that we're finding ourselves in lead back to these emergency powers, which are completely illegal and not envisioned in the Constitution at all. And now they're going global. After being very successful here in the United States through the continuity of government program. So we're going to be taking a deep look at how that relates to all of the UFO threat action that has been proposed by the Central Intelligence Agency, Department of Homeland Security, and others there in Congress. So, you know, this report is going to take some very interesting turns because so many of the things that happened this week, including this, you know, mysterious rocket going into the moon, and NASA's boss saying, hey, you know, China's going to take over the moon, which is very, very unusual. I mean, in terms of diplomacy, that's a complete 1,000% wrong thing to say. But where is that coming from? This becomes very important as we go. Of course, we've had the assassination of the former prime minister of Japan, which is also very unusual. We'll cover some of that here tonight, along with the resignation of Boris Johnson, who was kind of a phony reformer over there in the UK and kind of gave these guys everything they wanted in the end with the whole COVID regime. But very interesting that his stats would go down to such a point. What it tells me is that they just want the new blood in there and that a lot of the things that he was in there for have been accomplished, which was, you know, to kind of come off like a nationalist in a sense and then surrender everything to, you know, the big wide world governing board, which he did quite well. And he was a Trump lookalike, so they had that going for them. But still, I think his resignation is unusual, and it actually ties into so many of these things. I want you to know that we're going to be doing really is diving into how these things all intersect. And so many of the things that we've done in this program relate to hidden technologies, relate to secret systems of finance. And we've been doing this for a while, and it's funny because you see a lot of the mainstream sources astroturfing the topics that I've discussed here with Dr. Farrell or Catherine Austin Fitz or Graham Hancock and the work that we've done in the X series. And that's good in a sense that they know people are clamoring for ideas and the information is starting to break through. But one thing I'm going to point out tonight, some of that astroturfing and how it's unhealthy and masquerades is the real thing. Just like the CIA bit with the UFO threat stuff, you know, suddenly we have CIA people coming forward and saying, I'm a contactee. No. You know, that doesn't work. And when we get into that and you have UFO researchers promoting that stuff, you just got to kind of, you know, metaphorically slap them silly and slap some sense back into them. And I've watched those with great interest, actually. Jim Semivan is somebody who's a deep, 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 dark operator in the Central Intelligence Agency. I mean, one of the top people. And he launched TTSA. He created that whole show, the To the Stars Academy with Tom DeLonge. That whole thing is just his creation. And it accomplished a few things that he wanted to do. Lord knows what the program is, but I have some real deep hints for you that I think are going to bring some of this forward. The other thing I want to point out is that in terms of what they've been bringing up around space, when we hear things about space and China taking the moon or mystery rockets and all this kind of stuff, nothing they've been giving to us about space has been true. And how do you stop a program for 50 years of going to the moon, for example, and then suddenly say, hey, you know what, we're all gung-ho to go back to the moon? That's an unusual thing. How are you going to explain those 50 years except that it was a secret infrastructure that was produced there And those are the types of things that we're going to be tackling tonight and going deep on this. This is our special report. And like I said, we'll take about 90 minutes with this, and I'll do some shout outs, even though we can't do the big Q&A tonight. But next week, when Olivia's back, of course, we'll do the big Q&A. But it's great to have you out there, and it's great to have Groovy running it. I wanted to start off with NASA, because NASA's been trying to gain ground since the whole Space Force thing happened through Trump. And this has been kind of getting very interesting, because what Trump was trying to do was create a mechanism by saying, I have a new branch of the armed services, therefore all the UFO files come back to me. And he put Pence out there to run these various space charades till they got to a very definitive Space Force. And this is kind of a major accomplishment in that administration. And what's happened is they've really neglected it largely in the Biden administration, because it is honeycombed with so many people that the Trump people selected for it. And so it's hard for them to get the kind of, you know, things they want to get going from the Biden side. But Trump's effort to get the UFO files back to him is a recognition on his side, that side that promoted that, that end of the kind of deeper structure that promoted Trump. They wanted that control of the UFO file. So there's a big game now with that stuff up in the air, and each side is trying to wrangle it from the other. And in the middle of it are the actual forces that have controlled that secret information, the aerospace companies and the intelligence agencies. They've been in control of it now since, which is the same battle that President Kennedy was in. So when we look at that and we look at the true nature of the secret space program, then we know that we're going places on this, and we get a real history going. We can understand all the pops and clicks that we're going to see happening in relation to this. Now, Bill Nelson, of course, the former Florida senator, he's the leader now, and his very unusual comments were that China was going to steal the moon. That's not the kind of thing that you say, and it's a very military-oriented comment. And also, NASA, of course, is supposedly in a non-military role, not the Space Force, as we know. So here we have China furious after NASA accuses it of stealing the moon. When have we ever heard this type of rhetoric? Think about that. The U.S. side has constantly constructed a smear campaign. This is what China is retorting with. In an interview with German newspaper Bild, NASA boss Bill Nelson had some choice words to say about China's upcoming space exploration ventures. And he goes into this big diatribe about how they're getting ready to steal the moon. So just previous to this, and it puts the moon back in the center of things again for some reason. Remember now, the Trump people had us going back to the moon in 2024, which is an election year, interestingly enough. And when Biden got in, he said, no, you know, 2028, maybe 2030. And they turned it into Artemis and all these, you know, they brought in all these weird messaging and symbolism pieces to it, which really didn't fit. So then we have mystery moon rocket crash. NASA finds weird new double crater on the moon's far side. So we have NATO and NASA looking at this. And they're saying, we don't know where the rocket came from. That's ridiculous, of course. Anything, you know, in this system of things, they can take photographs of license plate in underground parking garages, for example. And with the satellites, they can see where everything comes from. So the idea that something could, you know, crash land on the moon and they wouldn't know the origin of it is absurd with the way that they track things. So, you know, instantly these stories about the moon, new craters, NASA's involved, then China, you know, and who is basically blowing up things on the moon? And I guess the whole theme around what we've been seeing in the last week is things blowing up. The Georgia Guidestones, of course, come into that. And I'm going to tell you some very interesting things about the Georgia Guidestones as we get in tonight. But let's stick with the moon for a moment. All right. This might give us something of a hint. I gotta pull this thing closer. this report that came out of China, this was in mid-June. And now this is going to really help us put some of these pieces together as to why they're suddenly talking about stealing the moon and NASA's going crazy and all the rest. China publishes, then deletes, report of alien signals. All right, now this is a big deal. You know, we've had things out there before that have tried to garner alien radio signals, and we have SETI and all these research projects. It's tons of money, and they never come up with anything. This all goes back to the fact that Nikola Tesla in 1912 reported hearing repeating signals and responding, and then them responding back with a numeric code, numeric code. So that was the first indication of some of this kind of thing going on, that there was a force out there that was trying to communicate with us with radio waves. And so that's how it became the cornerstone of a program. Now, it's been said before that that was a cover program. And I'm sure there is a lot of that. But nonetheless, you know, we've done things like that before. We've all seen it. You know, they sent out pictures of Adam and Eve in space, 1977. And what's interesting about that, too, is, you know, now they wouldn't even know because they can't say what a woman is. The Supreme Court justice sits there and says, oh, I don't know what a woman is. So I don't know what you would send out now. Non-binary figurines. But what's interesting for me about this is the whole radio wave aspect and impact. So, you know, at times it's been rumored that we got the wow signal and things like that, and that we actually have had this interaction going on. So now a major center of scientific research in China published a major report on this saying we got alien signals. That was in mid-June. Observations from a radio telescope almost certainly aren't evidence of aliens, but we'd love to know more about these alleged signals. This is how space.com and National Geographic shoot this down, because it's not their, you know, controlled narrative of this stuff. It's China's. All right. Reported observations came from a 500-meter aperture spherical telescope nicknamed FAST, or Sky Eye, in China. According to the article Science and Technology Daily, which was re-uploaded on WeChat, the telescope is a 500-meter, 1,640-foot dish. So it's one of those major dishes like the one they got rid of in Puerto Rico when they wanted to do this stuff. They just dropped the cable and got rid of the thing. Now, here's what the actual article said. Listen closely. A few days ago, Professor Zhang Tongli, chief scientist of the China Extraterrestrial Civilization Research Group of the Department of Astronomy and Extraterrestrial Civilization Research Group, that's a mouthful, of Beijing Normal University, revealed that his team had used the Chinese Sky Eye to discover several cases of possible technological traces in extraterrestrial civilizations from outside the Earth. That's a pretty major statement, even if he was wrong or whatever. It's a dramatic claim by one of their top guys. Zhang Tongli said that there are several narrow-band electromagnetic signals different from the past, and the team is currently working on further investigation. In 2020, the team discovered two groups of suspicious signals of extraterrestrial civilizations during data processing of China Sky Eye. So they got this whole thing, and then there was a big pushback behind the scenes. They yanked the article, the scientist goes underground, and we don't hear about it. Here's another thing, which is our own media barely touches on it, except to say, scoff, scoff, no way it could have happened without us being a part of it. Part of what you're seeing with this rush into the end zone to control this narrative is if a country gets up there, even if they're playing nice with us, you know, we've seen China play incredibly nice and control as a real puppet master of so many of the American politicians. And they were largely behind the COVID op as well, or deeply involved, shall we say, one way or another. But this whole thing about, you know, if China or India is up there, and India is a lot more friendly to us, of course, but if they're up there and they make their own discoveries and they say, you know what, hey, we found alien pillars, like it's all over. Everything that they've been hiding through X-Protect, these other secretive groups, all the killings, you know, keeping the secret, all the lethal activity or destroying people's reputations, that all goes out the window, 75 years for nothing. So they run into this problem over and over again. The follow-up for this is China lets it out, somebody behind the scenes in these groups, these intelligence and aerospace circles on the black side, they really go crazy. And somehow they get that paper yanked. That's a pretty dramatic development. Right after that, NASA's head comes out and says, you know, Bill Nelson says, well, they're trying to steal the moon. So now he's turning things on China almost to get at their credibility, or they're doing things for war purposes. So if they do come out and make their own UFO declaration, then it's not going to be believed because it'll be outside of the time structure that's been set up by this other group. And that's what we're really seeing, is these groups competing with different narratives, and one wants to come out of this supreme and dominate all the rest. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep here tonight, of course, at the anniversary of the Roswell announcement. Was 75 years ago yesterday. And we did a show covering that, and we did it with someone who's very contrary to the traditional alien narrative around Roswell, and that was Dr. Joseph Farrell. We did that for you last week. But I want to say that, you know, we've done shows relating to Roswell, and my own feeling on it is that it was, in fact, a crash of an alien craft, and that's why it looms so large in the UFO file. I think the thing about it is that there were a number of them in that era of the 1940s. Something was taking place, but right side by side with it was this whole X-Protect, X-Development. So if we can get to know one, if we can get to know, for example, things about that X-Technology, we'll start to understand what they know about off-world civilizations, for example, or something else that's taking place. So I think it's legit. For example, when Dr. Farrell says, well, you know, the first thing they did was they yanked all the security files on the Nazi scientists that we had brought over through paperclip. What was that about? They suspected that a group of Nazis was still doing this. That has to be looked at, because the level of technology achieved is going to help us understand what's in that the UFO file. Because what resides in the UFO file is the X technology, but not all X technology is related to UFOs. And so this is a very important thing for us to kind of splice through. I want to remind you, while I'm thinking of it, to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. We've seen some massive, and I mean massive, heavy duty censorship going on. And we've done our best to make it through that. You know, I definitely, when I look at this, I can see that we're in the era of censorship. We've seen people shut down left and right. And so it's very important for us to have some kind of regular communication just among ourselves that gives us that ability without the social media networks, you know. And I think that the networks have been great for connecting people, but they're also an incredible problem because of the censorship in particular, never mind the data mining and all the rest. But what I would say is, you know, as long as we're still working on these platforms, that we'll promote them and celebrate them as much as we can. But I think it is smart for us all to get on the newsletter. That's a free newsletter, and it lets you know just what amazing shows that we have coming up for you. And very kind of dramatic things we'll have for you this summer, including some very important X-Series episodes that will deal with the Atlantis factor and how that is coming into kind of hot zone focus right now. And some of those reports that we've done on Marvin Minsky and Ghislaine Maxwell and stuff. I have something pretty big to announce about that maybe in about 3 weeks or so. So make sure you're signed in for those. Okay, that's great to have so many of you here with us. And let's move now to, I'll just finish off this piece about NASA. NASA's official word now on the mystery rockets is that the mystery rocket crash on the moon is highly unusual. All right, okay, it's highly unusual. Thanks for that official pronouncement. I don't think that helps us very much. The idea that NASA or Space Force or Space Command, which includes Lou Elizondo, by the way, CIA guy, they hired him. So, you know, he's not a whistleblower. He's a government official. So we have to keep that in mind. The person that's been kind of ringing the bells on this with Fox News and all that stuff is working for Space Command. Certainly those people would know. And the idea that they wouldn't is beyond absurd. And there's no way that we would let, you know, some mystery rocket fly into the moon. It's not going to happen. It's just like the idea of a plane flying into the Pentagon. You know, we set up defenses through the whole Cold War so that wouldn't happen. There was no way anyone could do it. And so when they say during the 9/11 attacks, well, a plane went into the Pentagon, it's not possible. You can't do it. If you bicycle too close to the Pentagon, you know, they're going to take the machine guns out. I mean, it doesn't work that way. So we've been, you know, kind of led to believe when it comes to this sort of official security, we have a very small idea of how it operates. And certainly from space, you know, the whole point behind so many of the things that they're doing in relation to space is to control things where? On the ground. And they're trying to totally dominate this environment. That's the first goal. And then, you know, move that out as they go. And these are the groups that we're talking about that are engaged in this. So when we get back to it, though, if you really track it back, this was a German Nazi priority. They wanted to build incredible space weapons. They had a very developed rocket program that we inherited. And the Soviets did too. They inherited a lot of those scientists. You know, we talk about paperclip. It's like, oh, we got these Nazis. Well, where do you think the rest of them went? The Soviets got them. So both sides were playing this game. But these guys were very, very advanced. And so when we look at some of the things that they've been able to pull off, you know, it starts off with a fundamental basis of this advanced program from space that can control things on the Earth. And, you know, it can work out great, for example, GPS and all these other communication things. Fine, you know, we enjoy those things. But what can you do with it if you don't have the interests of the human race at heart? You can control things on the ground. That was the great vision of Hitler's space program. And we inherited that and moved it on. And President Kennedy, it's a very interesting chapter in all this. And I would say Eisenhower as well. Eisenhower understood how it could be misused and was very vocal about it because he'd been through World War II. He'd seen cities blown up. He'd seen somebody's whim, you know, completely demolish a culture and institutions in a few seconds. So he understood. And so when we get into this whole thing about the space program and its peaceful mission, now all you hear about is space is a warfighting domain, as if that decision were made and it should be just a new normal. But it hasn't been made. And in fact, there are treaties that were still signed onto about the peaceful uses of space and scientific research, etc. So now we get into this idea about why they're moving toward a war footing and how we get into these things relating to the UFO file. This is crucial, and that's where the secrecy comes in. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to link two things that we cover very heavily on this program, the continuity of government secrecy and the secrecy around the UFO file. And I'm going to do it through the figure of General Van Herk, the leader of NORTHCOM, and believe it or not, Justin Trudeau, or Justin Castro Trudeau. Now, before all these kind of weird things started happening, a very unusual meeting took place. This should grab our attention. This is the meeting of Van Herk and Trudeau right here at Cheyenne Mountain Complex. Now, Van Herk is the NORTHCOM commander. He is the combatant commander of the United States here. He would take over the country if continuity of government was activated. And I'm sure many of you have seen the shows when we talked about continuity of government and how it gets activated and the types of people that would do that. This has been a threat hanging out in the back. And of course, it was activated during 9/11. There we have Trudeau visiting basically the ultimate nuclear bunker. And he's with his defense secretary, who's also speaking very unusually. I'm going to get into all their comments as we go here, but let's put that linkage together immediately. Justin Trudeau, who pulled the emergency button on his own people, the truckers there, and called a kind of martial law to get rid of them and their complaints about not wanting to deal with his medical rules. And, you know, calling out their own for their own freedom and their own sovereignty and him acting like a petty dictator. Justin Trudeau now, this is June 8th. For more than 60 years, Canadians and Americans have worked side by side at NORAD Command, the world's only binational command. More of this important work being done to keep people safe. And there he is pushing it out and standing with our friend Van Herk. By the way, although there are communications along this line, we don't have former Canadian prime ministers going to NORAD and doing photo ops and stuff. And you don't have the combatant commander walking around showing off his bunker. That's unusual. Here's more. And there we have the failed defense secretary currently, Lloyd Austin, who's done just a terrible job with Afghanistan, Ukraine, you name it. These guys will get us into wars left and right. But here we can see Trudeau's right in the middle, and here's our friend, Admiral Van Herk, General Van Herk. Now, here's the thing about Van Herk, and I've pointed it out in this program, but I never get tired of emphasizing this. Here's the thing. Van Herk has a very unusual background in this sense, because he comes directly out of the 509th Bomber Group. The 509th Bomber Group is the same group that discovered the Roswell wreckage 75 years ago out there in the desert. Outside of Roswell, New Mexico. Roswell was the closest place, but really it wasn't even in Roswell. That's the fascinating thing about it. But of course, they have those wonderful, kind of that circuit of people and families that have remembered all these things through the years. But it's very interesting that at this point where they're coming forward with the UFO file, where we have congressmen talking about time travel, and we have the CIA saying, well, we have a threat, and, you know, they put up Lou Elizondo, and he is the conduit for this, saying, you know, oh, I've seen secret files and I ran a secret UFO program and all the rest of it. And we know that many of the things that he said publicly are just lies, straight out, like really bald-faced lies that are very easy to debunk. And a lot of now, you know, the New York Post has debunked them. The Black Vault has debunked them. A lot of people have just debunked this stuff. So, there's a big creepy thing hanging out around the UFO file, and that's no surprise to us. Now, here's a few kind of funny things. When they announced this thing, they put up a big picture of the American flag and the Canadian flag, and it says, this week on CBC News, the House General Van Herk discusses the importance of upgrades to domain awareness in North American security. And they have these flags up, and of course, the bridge just has all this X-steganography. So I enjoyed that personally. Whether or not that was intentional, well, we don't know. Okay. Here's just a few key pieces from this. And again, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We're going deep now on the emergency powers and how they relate to the UFO file through the continuity of government program. And boy, does that plug into everything that we've seen going on this week, including the bit about SpaceX and Musk backing out on the Twitter deal. That's also very interesting, and it is kind of something which we did put across here on the show earlier. Okay, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Defense Minister Anita Anand got a firsthand look Tuesday at North America's first line of continental defense, a system experts and political leaders agree is badly in need of an upgrade. Yes, you have to upgrade the continuity of government. We have a number of initiatives on the table right now with the United States, and we'll be moving forward shortly with a plan to modernize NORAD. I will leave it at that. That's Trudeau with Anand. Now, Canada, here's just a kind of a general thing for us to be aware of. All these countries operate now with emergency powers. So you see Canada operating with emergency powers during the trucker thing because their actual popularity is so low. It's below 28%, which is a threat. Well, you can't govern really below 35, 40%. Even that is getting very tricky. But when you're in the 20s, it's over. So what they've figured out through Macron and through these various people is they either have to step aside or they call in emergency powers. Now, you see that with Stepford Biden and our president here, who many people are aware of as in a deep cognitive, you know, has deep cognitive issues, shall we say. And so that becomes so obvious on a world stage, it actually diminishes the United States. And it's the kind of thing that the media intentionally left out because they hated Trump so much. And that's what we end up getting, this Stepford Biden kind of bizarro world. But what is interesting is that he's also shown an inclination towards using emergency powers for things. And they tried to figure out at the end of the Trump administration how to activate continuity of government, because they were looking really down the barrel of another Trump administration, which was a huge problem for them on many levels, but in particular in relation to this secret technology that they want to release under their own narrative and their own terms. So we find ourselves in kind of an interesting situation where at a certain point they were planning for a Pelosi presidency. And this is widespread. I mean, this is not something that's just cooked up. It actually is the case that when they were planning on taking this situation and putting Pence and Trump, you know, in during the election into like a COVID, oh, Trump has COVID, and then they were going to do something with Pence, and Pelosi was supposedly next in line. And she came out and said, I've discussed it with continuity of government. So that ease of talking about continuity of government, the emergency powers, and things along this line show where in the background their heads are at. They were formulating this idea. And there's a good deal of evidence as well that President Trump got word of it. And that's behind the firing of people like Mark Esper, who just came out with a kiss and tell book about the raving madman, Trump. But it is Esper who appointed Van Herk. Van Herk comes out of the 509th Bomb Group. Now Van Herk is collaborating with the Canadians on something in relation to NORAD and Cheyenne Mountain, which is our ultimate command bunker, just in case. So this public grandstanding of this thing is interesting. Well, here's what comes on the heels of that and might explain some of it. Are you ready? Remember, COG and UFO, put those two together. Some of the great people who research this on the deep state side give us COG, right? And some of the people who are good researchers on the UFO side understand the UFO thing. They don't understand anything about COG. If you can bring those things together, this is where you start to understand what they're doing with the whole threat aspect and all the rest. Okay, here's the headline. Canada is going to share UFO info with the US, officials say. So Van Herk's meeting with Trudeau, they get together. They say, here's the bunker and here's all the rest. All right. So now Canada, supposedly, they're going to be in on the whole UFO threat aspect. So they say, oh, we're sharing our files. Here's the thing that Paul Hellyer told me on this program. Actually, and he's the former defense minister of Canada, who is the late Paul Hellyer, because he passed away at the age, I think, of 95. But he was a remarkable man and very active in politics and all the rest. But what he said, and something that is reflected in the testimony of Stan Fulham, who was a NORAD officer, that the militaries of these different countries, the United States and Canada, have an agreement with each other. And that agreement is we can communicate about the UFO file without telling our leaders, like the prime minister and the president, or that whole structure. It gives them plausible deniability, and it gives us the ability to work these things out. But what it also does is it maintains that secrecy. And that's why it was invented. And that goes all the way back to the 1940s and 50s, because there's a good deal of Canadian cases in relation to this in NORAD. Also in Canada, because it wasn't so built up at the time, it was much easier when these things were seen, you know, because they didn't have all the city lights and everything else to compete with. So let's get into this a little bit. Canadian government officials are asking their U.S. counterparts about UFOs and nuclear security. Here's what's interesting. President Kennedy in 1963, November 12th, 10 days before he was assassinated, he approached his CIA director and said, I want all of the cases related to high-risk UFOs because I want to share them with our Russian counterparts, because I don't want, in relation to nuclear security, something to happen if they see one of these things going over a nuclear base and it triggers off a false alarm. And we know there's been a lot of things in relation to this. Well, it's very odd now that this is the kind of predicate. This is what they're, you know, this is the kind of fake reason they're able to bring this in. All right. These contacts were revealed in a pair of letters between the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission and our Department of Energy. Now, it's well known by anyone who studies the UFO thing that Department of Energy has a big, you know, security classification that allows them to move a lot of these X projects through these various government agencies. So on, given the shared priority for nuclear safety and security of our nuclear facilities and the growing interest in UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, as we know, UFOs rebranded, in both Canada and the United States, CNSC is committed to raising the issue with the United States counterpart. And then they said, we reached out to our counterpart and the Director of National Intelligence. Okay, so just to round this piece out, Avril Haines is the Director of National Intelligence. And Avril Haines was John Brennan's secretary. She was his second in command, his deputy, when he was the CIA director under Bush, under Obama. Now, what happened with Brennan is very interesting because he didn't let out anything about the UFO file. The Obama administration was one of the most tight-lipped about the UFO file of any. They didn't even, you know, have entertaining one-liners about it. And but John Podesta was chief of staff for Obama, and he was really big with the TTSA and that whole push for the Hillary disclosure thing. So then we have Brennan, and then Brennan comes out later and says, oh, you know, not only is he kind of completely out to remove Trump and comes forward as a pundit on MSNBC, which is a weird thing for a CIA director to do. But he suddenly starts talking about UFOs, and he's like, we have to get that government to release those files. You know, here he is, a guy who sat there for many years as director of Central Intelligence, and he's saying, oh, that darn government has to give us these. I want to point out, I mentioned earlier Jim Semivan and Dr. Hal Puthoff. Puthoff and Semivan. Semivan is 25 years and you never retire from the CIA, but it's 25 years. And then Puthoff is 40. Put that together. That's 65 years already of experience. These are the guys who launched this New York Times wave and the whole, you know, TTSA, that whole false disclosure bit. Here's their record on the record. Co-founder, board member, vice president of operations for To the Stars Academy. Jim Semivan, 25 years as operation officer for Central Intelligence Agency's Directorate of Operations. That's the top level. So the Central Intelligence Agency created a company. Hal Puthoff, director of the Institute for Advanced Studies. He's been involved in every kind of CIA program from remote viewing to analysis of potential alien craft. You know, so this guy has been deep into it. And I learned a lot about him through my interviews with Russell Targ. And certainly, you know, he gets a lot of respect for the things he's done and all the rest. But nonetheless, four decades with the CIA. And we have to keep that in mind. So when we get to Avril Haines, who was the deputy of the Drone King, named such because he liked to drone people at weddings just to try to get one terrorist. So she became known as the Drone Queen because her big thing was, I really want to create legal frameworks for us to be able to go after American citizens who are overseas participating in terrorist activities. Well, anyone who's an American citizen is entitled to a trial, a hearing, and the legal process, regardless of who their collaborators are or accused or whatever. That's just the way our system works. And so she wanted to create all of these justifications. That's what she was known for. Now she's the Director of National Intelligence. And guess what? Her top priority is UAP and UFO disclosure. So like Brennan, these people are now rebranding themselves as champions. You know, that bad government has to give us those details. So this is the kind of freak show that we're operating in the middle of. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. Wow, it's great to have so many of you here with us tonight. What an incredible week. I'm trying to get to all of it. I haven't even touched. It's like the whole iceberg is huge. So there's a lot of different ones to get to. But just a quick rundown, as you know, is we had the assassination of the Japanese, former Japanese prime minister, which is a big echo. You don't see that actually over there in Japan. That hasn't been part of, you know, they didn't have the deep state operating on that level where it was open, as we have that history in America with the Kennedys and with Martin Luther King and others. But it is very, very interesting that all these things are taking place. You would almost call it sort of deep state astrology, right? Where we're in a weird phase here because all these things are happening in rapid succession. You had the July 4th shooter, you know, came out of the blue. And this was one of those stories, again, another one of these gun stories that didn't just has a weird ring to it, like the Uvalde shooting. So we got into a lot of these types of things. And then suddenly all of these strange space narratives, which I'm trying to thread together here to give us some of those, that understanding. So it's great to have you guys out there with us. We'll go about another 45 minutes or so. And I'll do some shout outs at the end. We're not going to take your questions today because I don't have the lovely Olivia, but she'll be back next week. And she says hello to everyone. And, you know, it's interesting because the shows that we have coming up for you for July, with interviews and the X series, just watch out. Make sure you're on that newsletter list. Okay. Next up, our friend, Congressman Gallagher, Mike Gallagher, becoming very, very interesting. Now, there's a whole wave of these congressmen and senators who suddenly are incredibly enthusiastic about UFOs. I mean, they are losing it, you know. Marco Rubio, oh, I want UFO disclosure. Kirsten Gillibrand, who held up the entire National Defense Authorization Act in order to get a UAP office established. That was run by April Haynes, the director of national intelligence. Well, you're not going to get a lot of transparency there. And she was working with Rubio to do it, which is also weird because she's a super Democrat and he's a neocon Republican. So the collaborations are getting thick. Somebody's telling them in the back room, hey, you know, you're going to get influence and you're going to get money if you do this stuff. Now, you might say that's cynical. I'm just saying when you get into politics, you see where people move. And if you haven't seen somebody ever talk about a subject before, and then suddenly you have this group of about 15 people who are just talking about it all the time, you know something's up. And you know that they're privy to it, and we're not. So our way to get privy to it is to analyze those connections and those people. So let's take a look at Gallagher. Gallagher is, you know, very interesting in this sense, that when they did this whole UFO hearing back in May, all the people who were involved in it were all Department of Homeland Security people. And a lot of their backgrounds were, you know, deep, deep, either CIA, National Intelligence University, the whole bit. But Gallagher was particularly interesting because, one, he wanted the fraudulent Wilson documents to be read into the record. That's weird because it might have even been a move to say, we can debunk this stuff later. But when you have a series of documents where everybody involved has denied speaking the stuff, it becomes kind of a literary myth. So the Wilson documents don't have much. So reading them into the record is an odd thing to do for transparency. But let's go with it anyway. The next thing he did is after those hearings, he wanted to be Mr. UFO Man. He started giving these interviews on all these radio stations and podcasts saying, you know what? I think that they're visitors from our future. Now, this is one of the interesting theories about the whole UFO wave, Greys and Pleiadians and the whole bit, is that some of these people who are involved in coming back here and abducting us, and that whole alien abduction thing, is us from the future. So that's been out there for a while, and some people have really examined it in a solid, serious fashion. But nonetheless, for him, for a congressman, a sitting congressman, to go on these programs and just glibly state this. And actually, you know, so he's suggesting that, one, that time travel is real, two, that people from the future are coming back here. So he's a different kind of narrative thread with all this. And through people who've known him, I've actually tried to get him to speak about it on this show, because I feel like those people, you know, I have enough of a base about who they are to get them to say what the real truth is. That's why I invited people like Elizondo and Mellon onto this show. And Chris Mellon, of course, his cousin came on the show and told us the real story about Mellon and Elizondo and how they're being used by this deep state operation. So there's a big piece in here. And particularly with me, I just want to say personally, you know, look, Avi Loeb's astronomy lab is literally two blocks from me. So, you know, just that whole milieu there of the Harvard gang, you know, and how they are becoming the banner holders for this false version of disclosure. And if you watch Loeb and how they set up Avi Loeb, who's this big astrophysicist at Harvard, as the key person with the UFO narrative around the whole AI thing. And his thing was Oumuamua is AI and we need to get our AI up to snuff to deal with this. Well, it was weird. He started adding CIA people like by the week. And he was like, this is our new member. And you go into them, it's like a big, long CIA background. And then he finally added Elizondo and Mellon. So that whole thing is so compromised. And so in the work that I do, it seems that you know, I'm just surrounded by that element. And I've done my best to bring forward the fact that they aren't playing it straight. So when people like, you know, the Tucker Carlsons of the world or the Joe Rogans and those guys have these guys in their program, they never get any tough questions because they're just sitting there like, and I've said this about Megyn Kelly too. It's a big problem. The mainstream media can't handle the UFO file. They don't know enough about it. That's really one of the big problems. So when you have Tucker Carlson doing softball interviews with CIA people like Elizondo, or, you know, you have Rogan and doing those types of things, you know, and saying that Jeremy Corbell, this guy who was a yoga instructor, actually is a UFO expert. And, you know, because he made a film about Bob Lazar, these are really not well-informed positions. And it's also, I think what happened with some of these shows like Tucker's show and Rogan's show, don't get me wrong, I think some good issues get raised there, but I think that they're pilfering many, many topics out of the alternative milieu and the things that we do. And it's starting to be, you know, people have sent me things. It's pretty wild because you look at that roster of subjects that they're covering, and it looks a lot like the Dark Journalist show. It's weird. It's just this weird astroturfed version of the thing. But instead of getting to the hard core of it, and not just my show, but other shows in this alternative research side. But, you know, when you get to the core of it, it's pretty interesting because they don't, what they do is they have the CIA come on to talk about, you know, government secrecy, people who were sworn to uphold it. That doesn't make any sense. Do you see how that kind of flimsy corridor of handling this and just kind of using it for market share? Like, oh, you know, like there was a UFO thing. That's very different than studying the UFO file, for example, or people saying, well, there's a threat, you know, we need to combat that threat with more military money. They already get $1 trillion a year. For what? And that's the money that we know about. And every president, you know, going back to Truman, they know how much the military wastes money. You know, when you ask for one plane, they make three, you know. So if they're already doing that behind the scenes, and then we're supposed to give them more money for a UFO defense project because suddenly they want to, you know, interpret this stuff as a threat. It's kind of weird, but it's interesting. And I'll point that out. With Rogan, there was Rogan's thing. And it is, these headlines are starting, they're starting to look like the Dark Journalist show. Look at Joe Rogan, controversy, aliens, UFOs, CIA, Putin. You know, it's getting kind of interesting. And I think, you know, it's nothing against him personally, but when you deal with $200 million, you know, you're going to go in and you're going to market for different areas. And it's not going to be about what you believe. You're not going to ask them tough questions that are going to make them give you answers. If you have softball CIA people on talking about UFOs, you're not moving the conversation at all. You're just taking $200 million from Spotify. And it's true with Tucker Carlson and other people of this milieu. I don't want to say it as an overt criticism. What I want to do is more identify it for what it is. It is a caricature of that kind of truth-telling thing, which I think you can't get. You know, if you're getting paid $250 million to report on the truth about UFOs, if they tell you not to say a certain thing, you're not going to say a certain thing because they're going to pull away the $250 million. So that's a problem when it comes to these things and bringing them out. You know, I see that also when we're talking about these different things, that they're pandering to different ends of the spectrum. Just like when Tucker Carlson was talking about Elon Musk and pumping him up and saying, oh, he's the second coming and all this stuff, you know, but I've studied Musk. I know a lot about Musk and, you know, he is not somebody who, you know, he's somebody who is working more along transhumanist lines. And so that's very anti-human culture, in my opinion. So the idea of these conservatives who are embracing him is very interesting. And we've reported on that. So we're in an interesting space where sometimes they just like to fill up the frequency of like, oh, look, this guy's against this guy. So they sort of just create this thing. But I want to get to something authentic. You know, so when I'm talking about dark journalism, I just want to get to the actual facts of the thing. So, for example, when they were doing the UFO conference and they said, you know, the congressional hearing about it, the first question really should be, was there a group, since you're admitting that there was a huge cover-up around the UFO thing, was there a group that was designated by the intelligence agencies to destroy the reputations, or worse, in relation to people who were coming forward about this? That's the number one question that you would ask about the nature of the agency that's been containing this stuff. And for them to say, well, you know, we don't know about UFOs. This is a shock to us. We want to find out what's out there. I mean, you know, the intelligence agencies, NASA and all the rest of it, they've had that information for how long? I mean, CIA is 1947, right? 75 years since Roswell. Okay. So 75 years to study it at least, right? NASA, 1957, 1958. So they know about these things. For them to like come on like that, then we have this kind of cycle of disrespect that goes on in that conversation, because what's taking place is they're pretending a certain thing because they're ready, based on corporate and political and intelligence forces, to roll out a particular narrative about something. So they're on one level and we're on this level down here. We don't get any of that. So by bypassing that structure, I think we can get to the facts and the evidence. And I think that things like, you know, Rogan and things like that, I want to, because people have asked me about how I feel about that. I don't think that they're bad, but I think that they're limited. They're limited hangouts. I guess that's the classic name. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep here tonight on this very unusual combination of the COG emergency powers mixed with this UFO file threat narrative and the pushers that are involved. UFO pushers, that's my new name on them. I want to remind you to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That's a free newsletter, and it's going to keep you in touch with us here through all the incredible, and I mean, pretty wild censorship that we've been seeing. It's a great crowd here tonight. Let's say we'll go another half hour or so, and we won't take questions tonight. We don't have Olivia, but we will next week. So save those good questions, but I'll do a big round of shout outs at the end, which I love to do anyway. All right. Next up, Gallagher. Gallagher has been waiting patiently. Congressman proposes whistleblower protection for UFO spotters. This is interesting. Now, in the same hearing that Gallagher participated in on UFOs in late May, it was raised by an Illinois congressman to a Department of Defense official that amateur interest groups were kind of mucking up the works, and that there should be penalties for independent people studying the UFO thing and then sharing the research online. And then the Defense Department official, he's sitting there and he says, you know, I really want to work with Congress to figure out a whole, like, you know, how we do penalties on that. Here's the bottom line on that. Basically, they want to condense the UFO file into the Department of Homeland Security, because Homeland Security can trigger things like continuity of government. And if they have a big enough reason, like a UFO threat, that's the kind of thing that they're going to do. So some people, in looking at this, who are researchers, say this never in a million years that they, you know, would trigger an actual you know, UFO threat. They wouldn't try to pull this off. That's too far out. I just want to remind you that in the past couple of years, you know, they've had basically penalties for you walking outside of your house. So if you don't think they would do that, you know, if you thought the COVID op was something, just wait till they get rolling with the UFO threat thing in a full way. This is the foundation of it. It's in a place where it can be smashed, in fact, because there's so much information out there and there's so many broad opinions relating to actual research and, you know, dead researchers. How many people have gone through the UFO field and left us that legacy? you know, so we're standing on the work that they've done. So there's too much of it there for them just to say, well, we discovered UFOs in 2017 and guess what? They're real. And we need all this money to protect ourselves against them. Plus, they might have a message that our environment is in trouble. So we can use that to tax you for, you know, all that great climate stuff. I mean, that's where they're going with it. And they're sitting in boardrooms figuring out what's going to be the thing that's going to work. And there's a faction that is operating with the continuity of government aspect in mind. I don't say that they do it lightly. I just say that they're crazy enough to operate. Now, I want to double back here for a minute on Gallagher. Now, remember, Gallagher's the one who said, oh, there should be, you know, this is probably time travelers coming back from our future. And he's the one who read the false Wilson documents into the record. Congressman Mike Gallagher wants protection for people who go public about UFOs. So we have him sitting in on this meeting where it was raised that if you just open a UFO book on Amazon, you're going to get prosecuted by the FBI. To suddenly this guy wants protections. Okay. So they're setting up a narrative here to bring out a kind of a, you know, an Elizondo type whistleblower. UFO obsessed Republican congressman has introduced an amendment to the Defense Authorization Act to offer new protection for UFO whistleblowers. By the way, they keep doing it to the Defense Authorization Act because it's purse strings. So if I attach something to the National Defense Authorization Act, and that's almost $1 trillion that everyone else is missing out on, the pressure builds for anyone to pass anything that I lob in there. And if I'm one senator involved with that, I can actually slow up the works a lot. So it's like a weird hostage-taking type situation that goes on in relation to this. And Gillibrand did it for the UAP office, but it was a very, you know, it's a very illegitimate thing to do. Mike Gallagher has pushed for a new rule to establish a process for receiving reports concerning unidentified aerial phenomena. It's hoped that, why don't you just say UFO, with these in place, soldiers and contractors will feel more comfortable sharing details of unexplained phenomena. Now, this is where I want to point out the astroturfing. This is, in fact, a good idea. It's been raised by UFO researchers and people have been deep in the field before, that if you gave the ability for people to come forward with this, then, you know, without facing court-martial or something like that. The thing is, so few of them know anything of value about the UFO file that it's sort of a red herring. But even on its face, let's keep going with it, just thinking that's what they're really trying to do. How do you sit in then in a congressional hearing that talks about punishing amateur interest groups for studying the UFO file? It doesn't make any sense. Let's go next. The drive suggests that this could be a way of resolving the ever-present rumors that the government has evidence of extraterrestrial life. Those who come forward should feel comfortable that they will not be breaking secret laws and will be protected from reprisals. There are some on the UFO speaker circuit who say that they have proof of alien life but can't reveal it for fear of imprisonment. Yeah, guys like Elizondo who want to sell a book. Look, the government definitely has proof of alien life. They also have proof of the UFO file. And we already have on record one of the top physicists saying he was part of the UFO file. And the way it worked, they studied reverse engineered craft. And, you know, they went through a series of different leaders of that. And they were all the top physicists. Vannevar Bush is one that he identified. He identified himself being involved in the program as well. So, you know, these things we have to kind of understand have already been put out there and they just weren't followed up on or acknowledged by the government. And now we have people who roll in or pretending, oh, look, you know, it's a new thing. I just figured out this idea that we can put some money into finding out about those aliens, when it's a disingenuous tactic because they've been studying the stuff secretly for decades. All right. And also the people who have that information, the level that they want to operate on is what they want to do is they're hardcore right now into developing this whole program around, you know, they want to release their own version of how this is going to work. And that's crucial. So when we look at it, we have to take it more from that end of the spectrum. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. I think Gallagher, by the way, like Ruben Gallego, is very interesting to watch. Gallego is another one who, while in Congress, has that background, the intelligence link background. And he's the congressman in Arizona, and his ex-wife is the mayor of Phoenix. And Gallego actually studied here at Harvard. And when he went into the military, he studied psychological operations and crowd control. And they sent him into all these different war zones to activate that. And he comes back and he doesn't have anything to do with UFOs or anything like that until literally last fall. And suddenly he's like a huge UFO advocate. Oh my God, you know. And this is a guy who went through a complete identity change as well. Including he changed his name to be more Latino, and he wanted to appeal to the Latino district. He changed his appearance and all these different things. It's very, very interesting. But Gallego is another one who I think is one to watch. Gallego, Rubio, Gillibrand, and Gallagher are very, very something we really need to keep an eye on. Okay, more strangeness. Now, one of the things that came up with the destruction of the Georgia Guidestones, this is interesting. We have to think about the Georgia Guidestones a couple of different ways. First of all, they're so identified with the kind of conspiracy culture that the idea of them being exploded, you know, and somebody doing bombing them sets off actually a dangerous trend. The idea that someone in that conspiracy field set off, you know, a bomb. And that goes into the whole domestic terrorism piece. So before people start celebrating, oh, hey, you know, we took down the Rothschilds' Georgia Guidestones, actually, it looks like whoever did that stuff, you know, is part of the operation. It would seem to me it would be more of the kind of thing an intelligence agency would get a designated patsy involved in, and then paint, you know, they'd catch him and then later paint him as somebody in that whole field. As these, you know, violent J6 type people, right? Where they put people behind bars for walking around in the Capitol and taking pictures with the Capitol guards. This comes up right as they're doing all the J6 stuff. And this woman comes out and, you know, she says, oh, Trump, he was a madman. You know, he grabbed his Secret Service driver by the throat and wanted to drive through the Capitol, you know. I'm surprised that she didn't say he wanted to get up with a machine gun and just take everyone out. But it got, her testimony got weird. Then the CIA debunked it. I mean, the Secret Service said, no, that didn't happen. And so we have this kind of circus going on around J6, and it's this leftover thing to get this domestic terrorism bill in and also to oust President Trump from running again. Now, whether you think him running again or not is a good idea, the idea of a committee, a partisan committee controlling what you do or who you vote for is just like the CIA control of elections. It's just something you can't tolerate. And also, I think that there are other voices in the whole, you know, movement around freedom in America that don't have to be Trump. You know, you can have a whole group from the governor of Florida and beyond. But we have run into a place where you sort of have to... you know, it doesn't matter when you're talking about whether someone's a Democrat or Republican and these types of things. The only thing that matters is if they respect the Constitution that the country is founded on and everyone swears to. And that becomes fundamental. And when they don't, it doesn't matter what party that they're from, Republican or Democrat or anything. So, you know, if I say one thing about, well, you know, the DNC is completely corrupt because so-and-so, and there's a long list there of corruption, then, you know, Democrats can think, well, you know, I'm a Democrat and all the rest. It's interesting. Those types of identifications almost become obsolete in the current structure, because if that current structure is colluding in order to create slaves, in fact, of humanity, then all those former things go out the window. Just like, you know, a lot of people think we're in that old world where things get debated. But in fact, if you try to debate certain things, they'll just remove you. You become a non-person. And we've seen that in Orwell and all the rest, where that leads. So we have been warned about these things. And therefore, I think we need to take the view that whatever we're talking about, even if it's a political figure that we don't like, we want them to be treated fairly. And, you know, when we have schizophrenic leadership, and somebody walking around, you know, talking to ghosts, then, you know, you have somebody who's mentally impaired and most likely has very, very deep dementia issues and shouldn't be running the country. That's not a partisan opinion. That's just a fact. So we have to get beyond those types of struggles, in my opinion, politically. The UFO file looms large over this because it represents not just some idea of scary aliens or whatever, but a whole different understanding, a whole different line of scientific research, scientific and ethical and cultural impact. So to have one group operating with this and actually manipulating the public with it is bizarre. And to have that as a long-term thing and then, you know, think about it. What they want to do next is they want to ban people. The Department of Homeland Security wants to take this over and then say, oh, it's a threat. Therefore, we're going to handle it. So if you do your own research on it, watch out, because we're going to be there for you. And, you know, so they want to create this almost McCarthyite version for people who are studying the subject. That's what really, you know, we have to take a deep look at, because that's the type of fascism that's creeping into an area which, you know, anyone on the alternative research side knows the UFO file very, very well. And what a weird, strange, mutated impact this thing is having. All right. Speaking of strange moves there, Twitter vows legal fight after Musk pulls out a $44 billion deal. All right. This is fascinating for a lot of reasons. And I think that Musk really did get to the bottom of it, which is that most of what we see on Twitter is all bots, manipulation, and really hardcore, you know, brainwashing that's going on. And what he found out basically from doing this as an exercise, even though it cost him money, what he found out was that they lied about their base, one, and two, that he was ready to, you know, maybe create something to compete with them. It's a great way to get the market research going. But I think that we have to take a look at the whole thing with Musk and how he was laid out there and how we were looking at the conservatives, you know, embracing this whole idea that Musk is going to save the day, and Musk really putting together the smart cities and all the things that the Davos crowd is looking for. Now, there might be legitimate splits in the mentality of some of these people about how to handle these things, but we also have to be real that, you know, you're not really Elon Musk up there when you get to that point of the richest man in the world. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. You know, if you're in space, it's because you've been allowed to be in space by groups that protect that, you know, the secret space program and all the rest. They've laid the groundwork and they're willing to let you in if you're going to be the figurehead for certain things they want to do. And so your level of when you speak and you say something, how much of it is actually coming from you versus, you know, this committee that's behind you. That's what we need to understand a little bit more. And I think it'll give us a better understanding of the people involved and the pressures that they face. I mean, you can imagine in normal corporations, the pressures and things that happen in relation to this. You go into like a government thing, and then you go into a major corporate thing where you have the richest man in the world and you have a spacefaring company. Those things are under intense, intense control. And the idea that somebody is going to glibly go into this or that, you know, just doesn't add up. And if you study the background, I think, with Howard Hughes and his investment around the UFO file, then somebody like Musk makes a lot more sense. And again, I'm not saying that Musk is, you know, any worse than, you know, any of these people around the Davos thing. I'm just saying that he represents somebody who, it's kind of that astroturfing thing I was talking about with Rogan too. It's like they're creating a corridor. It's like a false back and forth that's going on there where you're saying, well, I'm for this guy because he's for freedom and I don't like these people because they're anti. And the problem is that these people are in a system that doesn't allow them to be for freedom or not. They just can be portrayed one way or another. And the way that you can get people to actually open up in a fair dialogue, deep discussion, get into things around the continuity of government or the UFO file, the black budget, et cetera, is by opening up and sticking with free speech, real journalism, real examinations, you know, not Anderson Cooper, you know, you know, we're talking about real, deep, something that we've reached a point where in the culture, if you can't get that level of transparency, you're headed over a cliff. But if you can get the transparency, which is built in to that system of the Constitution, then you're going places. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show, going deep tonight here on the UFO file and emergency powers. I want to touch base on emergency powers through the figure of Peter Dale Scott. I'm going to get into this in a minute. I want to remind you to join us at darkjournalist.com and for a free newsletter that's going to keep us in touch with each other through the intense censorship. We've watched it. We've lived through it. And we've all had those jaw-dropping moments of, oh my God, you know, they threw this doctor off of this platform for discussing certain things. And I guess in bringing that up, I should mention that a real warrior passed away, Dr. Zev Zelenko, and with his protocol and the other things that he brought through, just was a remarkable voice in the middle of all this stuff, very brave. And he would fit into JFK's profiles and courage because he stood up to the system when a lot of his colleagues wouldn't. But he passed away from cancer. I think he was 49 years old, but incredible voice for transparency and justice. And we know a lot of the other people in that milieu who are standing up like that really do need our support because they've been facing incredible opposition from a system that wants to silence them. And that is not how we do it in a free country. I also should mention that, you know, some of the people that are out there doing fantastic work, like RFK Jr. And his remarkable book about Fauci, you know, those are people who are really bucking the trend, and we need more of that. We need more of people standing up, and we need more of this kind of, you know, there's a realization there. And it's funny because there was a chilling moment, and I've spoken with RFK Jr. a few times. He's going to be back on the show, in fact, relatively soon. But one of the things that I had in my conversation with him, he gave me a real chill, is he said, you know, I can tell you from studying this that there was a time when you could say, well, I'll run for the hills, you know, and now you can't because of the way that the world is set up and the way the satellites are set up and the way that this kind of worldwide dictatorship is being set. You can't run for the hills. So you have, it's like, you know, the war is forced upon you. And I don't want to be overly dramatic with the language, but I've talked with like Secretary Fitz and people like this who have said to me, it's a war. So we're in the middle of war operations, and we need to see how that plays out. One of the things I wanted to mention about the Georgia Guidestones and, you know, how all the things that were represented there, how they were put up in the first place by this mysterious stranger named R.C. Christian, and how they had all these different instructions in different languages and all the rest. And one of them was to maintain the population of the earth at 500 million. You know, this is something where people looked at it and said, this is population control. And we've seen these people who are really obsessed with depopulation. And this is also, you know, a kind of a Nazi thing. But that entire structure and the whole thing that was out there with it, you know, we never really got the answers on it. One of the most interesting things about it is that there was all this information about a time capsule in relation to them that would be opened. And there was also a lot of astronomical activity in relation to the Georgia Guidestones. So, you know, we wouldn't agree with the things that were espoused there. But what I don't think this idea, like there's no celebrating that type of level of destruction. That's not a way to get anything done in any case. And two, it seems to me more of this kind of agent provocateur thing to lure in the idea that, oh, these were destroyed by these domestic terrorist types, you know, and trying to paint people who want freedom and a return to the constitutional principles in this fashion. So therefore, I think we have to look at this a lot differently. But the time capsule piece and the fact that all these newspaper, website headlines came out and said, oh, the time capsule part was a bust. You know, I thought that was weird. I really thought that was the weird part of the whole thing. And it made me wonder, did they actually blow it up to get at the time capsule? We've talked about time capsules extensively on this program, from the Nixon time capsules to what we call these stealth archives, which are documents that we know are there, for example, the JFK files, but that we can't get our hands on, even though we acknowledge that they're there. So the stealth archives, that runs its way all through the UFO file, but it also runs through major deep events in history. And there's already a huge stealth file aspect of the COVID operation as well. So we find ourselves in very unusual territory on these things. And so I don't, when people were doing a high five thing over the Georgia Guidestones being destroyed, it's not cause for celebration. In fact, I would be somebody who would say, no, I never like those take the win type propositions. I'd rather get to the bottom of the whole thing. And, there's no people who I think are serious about this thing, you know, who are looking to, cause levels of destruction like that. It doesn't fit with it. It's the kind of thing that's projected on people who are seeking the real transparency. And they'll do it. This is part of this report is also about presaging what's to come in relation to the UFO file and how turning it over to the Department of Homeland Security is going to play out, because they will, let me tell you, they have plans on the ground so that you do not look into those activities, and that people reporting sightings and things like that will have to be officially filtered through this thing. And they'll do it through things like the National Defense Authorization Act. So we have to be very, very careful about how we treat our freedoms in America and the types of things that we allow to happen. Let's try to round this whole thing out with some of the continuity of government goals. And this is something that Professor Peter Dale Scott outlines so well. Of course, Professor Scott, I spoke to him recently. He's going to come back on the program. He just turned 92, and he's more active than anybody. He was wrapping up a project, and so we're going to work out some time this summer to talk. But I always recommend Professor Scott's work. He is a retired professor at the University of Berkeley there on the left coast. And you would say he's actually associated, with more left causes, but he has no interest in this kind of, bizarro world leftism. And he's always been a brave voice for sticking up for people who weren't of his own political persuasion. But in any case, he's always been the ultimate expert on the deep state, and he understands the core of what these things are. His book, The American Deep State, contains the entire overview of what the continuity of government program is, and I highly recommend it for anyone. But this piece I want to read, because it'll help us to understand what I'm talking about in relation to the deep secrecy going on, and why we see characters like the NORTHCOM commander, Van Herk, strolling around, in public with Trudeau, there at their secret base. It just doesn't make any sense. But also this idea that, they're trading now the Canadian UFO files, and this guy's talking about, we're going to upgrade NORAD and all the rest. These are very, very tricky terrains, and we need to be aware of them. We need to be aware of the players on the UFO file side from Department of Homeland Security, and guys like Moultrie, from the DOD, and their background related to DHS. This whole thing has to be really widely understood, instead of the kind of circusy thing that goes on in the UFO field. And then on the continuity of government side, we need to know who those personnel are. And I want to say this about continuity of government. These are people in their mentality, and I understand it's part of the job, but think about it. In their mentality, what they need to do is figure out how to preserve and repopulate the world and survive in the event of nuclear devastation, and how they have to make those types of decisions. And I think that that plays with your head too, a little bit. and we've all seen versions of this, Dr. Strangelove and so on, 7 days in May, there's always been this tension there in the military. And it goes beyond the military into intelligence, that we have to be aware of, that it is the civilian government that runs things, and they are above the military and the intelligence agencies. Right now, that whole thing is upside down. And the petty authorities, you know, the Biden, Harris type people, they want the advent of total power through continuity of government, a Pelosi, you know, type. They want that type of activity because they can't, Justin Trudeau, they cannot maintain 28% popularity. You can't govern with it. So they're going to need a mechanism. The folks at Davos are going to need a mechanism. Here's Professor Scott. Listen to how this echoes and rings through our ears right now. With the implementation of COG emergency responses to 9/11, we have indeed seen an exponential expansion of America as a dual state, or what Dana Priest called the two governments. The one operated more or less in the open, the other a parallel top secret government visible to only a carefully vetted cadre. The second government, called by Priest top secret America, should not be thought of as identical to the deep state, but rather as the radically expanded institutional base for the deep state, ensuring an ever greater share of the national budget for top-down programs to constrain dissent both abroad and at home. Now we're starting to get the picture. Remember, one of the key goals of continuity of government is that there would never be a peace movement again that would stop, and that there would never be, you know, riots and things like that to protest against things that we've done, for example, in Iraq or Vietnam, and all through our history, Nicaragua. Part of continuity of government was to create the idea through programs like Rex 84 of how would you detain dissenters? And that's the piece that they kind of paraded around during the COVID aspect. The unchecked expansion of this base, much of it now it's outsourced, continued under Obama, even as the budgetary cutbacks have continued to weaken the public government citizens are familiar with. For example, CACI recorded $36.4 million in profits in the third quarter of fiscal 2011. It hired 400 new employees and was looking for another 400 analysts, attributed its success to the swelling cybersecurity and intelligence markets and its lucrative contracts for the Army for Intelligence and Information War Services. This has to be understood. That's just one company that was doing it. The CIA, Department of Homeland Security, they are outsourcing to, in many cases, unethical contractors to do these types of things, because then they can go back and say, oh, it was the contractor, we didn't do it, therefore we don't get court-martialed. And, you know, that's where they get the deep surveillance, that's where you get the destruction of the First Amendment and, you know, this whole aspect of search and seizure, et cetera. That's where the Constitution rolls over a cliff. So understanding continuity of government, not as just, you know, oh, I wonder if they would ever, you know, pull this emergency thing, but understanding it's an institutionalized base for all this other nefarious activity to take place will help us to take a much deeper look at it. Now, here's my special kind of piece on it. The UFO file is directly linked with the continuity of government activity. That's the piece that sort of, it needs to be understood in order for us to get to that next level. So with that, I'm going to leave you with just a couple more things here. I want to remind you, again, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. It's been an incredible night going over this with you on the UFO file and emergency powers. Of course, we'll be back with you next week. There might be, the way things are going, there might be a special report in between now and then as well. I want to just a couple of things I didn't get to before we're done. It's great to see so many people out there tonight, and Groovy Bean handling the ideas room with able skill. Erica Swenson Elliott out there, appreciate that. Thank you. Keep the faith. I like that. We really do need that. And I do want to shout out a few people who've really been very generous to us this evening. TaylorMade 3906. Can you comment on the Dark Knight satellite? It would be amazing for you to have Billy Carson have a discussion. Well, this is fascinating because the Black Knight satellite is something that was completely operational and hovering around our planet long before we had that technology, supposedly, unless we had something up there through a group that was able to do this, but just kept it under wraps. This is why the Mystery School activity, I think, becomes so important for us to understand, because they definitely were guardians of that advanced technology. And we know from some of the work of people like Walter Bosley, for example, and NIMSA, that there were groups in the 19th century who were very advanced around aircraft, not spacecraft, but just the fact that those types of groups existed long before the Wright brothers gives us an indication that all is not as it seems to be. We also, you know, when we look at that aspect of the technology and we think about the late 19th century and we think about people along the lines of John Keeley, if you look through some of the biggest public mystery school work, like Helena Blavatsky's Secret Doctrine or Anthroposophy and his book Theosophy, which, by the way, this is a very interesting story, but J. Allen Hynek had explained to a young researcher named Linda Moulton Howe that he had figured out through one book the entire UFO aspect of what was happening with UFOs. And she said, what was the name of the book? And he said, Rudolf Steiner Theosophy. Think about that. This is one of the top scientists who spent all of his time, the first half of his career, debunking UFOs for the government, and then realized, I realize now that they've been hiding this stuff, and comes out as the big advocate for it, and, you know, helps Spielberg create Close Encounters of the Third Kind, big blockbuster in 1977, and dies rather suddenly. I would say it's pretty interesting that this was the book, out of all the books he could have named, out of all the different authors, that he named Steiner's Theosophy book. So that's where my head goes around that. But the Black Knight satellite, I think, is not a hoax, and it's not something that is easily dismissed. As a matter of fact, there can be people who exaggerate stories about it, but something was going on that was unusual in relation to that. Just like the airship mysteries of the late 19th century, which seemed to display all the different type of function of the aircraft that we have now, or even in some cases, the advanced UFO style aircraft. So something in some group is operational with it. Here's another piece, since we're just kind of going over this a little bit. I always go back to the Casey readings because they're so advanced. And like the Steiner work, they're about 100 years or more ahead of their time. When you read some of that stuff, you know, you really start to get an understanding that the mystery schools, you know, and there are certain individuals who can tap into that. And I would say Steiner, you know, directly in a lineage of the mystery school and then creating a public one. And Casey just tapping into that, you know, his guides, you know, the people who were guiding him his whole lifetime, put together by the mystery schools. But I would say that one of the interesting things that he came to was they asked him in a reading, what was it that, you know, the Atlantean craft looked like, you know, describe it for us. And he said, well, this is the same thing as Ezekiel saw, but at a much later date. You know, so here's Ezekiel, maybe 5,000 BC, somewhere like that. And Casey's saying he's seeing Atlantean craft still around. So somebody had preserved that technology from the great disaster going back 10,000 BC and beyond, and had preserved the technology and all the incredible abilities that came with it. And here they are flying over Ezekiel. That's the stuff that he's seeing. He's seeing Atlantean craft. He's not seeing aliens. He's not seeing, you know, he has great spiritual epiphanies, but whatever he's seeing with that wheel within a wheel stuff, Casey's saying, well, it's actually Atlantean craft. That's Atlantean technology. That's important. Do you see how that, in a sense, is more powerful than UFO disclosure. Because if the Atlanteans had that background and we already were here and already came to this advanced level, then what does that speak about right now and the types of things that are hidden from us? Is it a bigger disclosure, in fact, that there are alien civilizations out there, or that we had some kind of advanced period where we were spiritually advanced and our technology overtook us and we basically destroyed the world then, and then here we are again at that precipice? To me, that is a very, you know, that's where my mind goes when you ask the black satellite question. But an excellent question it is, in fact. I'll do a few more shout outs here because we have great people out there. It's fantastic. It's great to see Thomas Tyson, Kate, Karen Carpenter, John MC, Alex Kuhn. Unidentified S4. Great show. Thank you. A cult fan, the man, the myth, he's out there. Fubar fighter. Androgen Cooper. I have to think about thank you, a cult fan. Much obliged. I had, you know, what's crazy is I had more, but I'll have another show coming up for you guys next week. So I'll just save some of this. And I do feel that one thing I wanted to point out is about the U.S. Navy concludes ICE-X 2022. I'm going to show you some really odd things about this next week. And ICE-X is a very unusual program where, you know, we've seen these things where they're talking about or examining the deep ocean and all the rest of it. And they've kept very, very deep disclosures about things in the hot zone that they've found. For example, we've gone through this, and I'm going to really open this up in the next month about the ruins that operate there in the Bahamas, that if you see them, you can't report them. And those ruins going back to a very advanced ancient civilization. The more I study it, the more I realize that the findings of Paulina Zelitsky in relation to that kind of deep metropolis that she saw off the western tip of Cuba and her whole story in relation to it, it's actually some of the best documented information around the whole Atlantis rediscovery piece. And the fact that the scientific community is mute on it is remarkable. But this ICE-X is something I want to keep an eye on. And the U.S. Navy's ICE-X training in the Arctic region amid rising global tensions. This whole piece now getting tied in with Van Herk. So somehow General Van Herk is associated with this ICE-X 2022. U.S. concludes ICE-X 2022. The U.S. Navy is concluding its ICE exercise, wrapping up nearly 3 weeks of research and training on above and below the Arctic Ocean ice. Submarine Force Atlantic Public Affairs. This piece and what they've been doing underwater and the whole submarine culture and the fact of, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell's submarine pilot license and all the different things that they were doing, taking some of the biggest scientists out there, of course, we can't forget what they were up to. But the question is, with the Maxwells and with the Epsteins, what were they doing with some of the most advanced scientists, taking them underwater in submarines? And of course, we've pointed out in this program that they were showing them those ruins in the hot zone. And that's why so much of that takes place, St. James Island, Epstein Island, and all the rest. So, you know, let's keep that in mind as we go here, that there's a much bigger story. And we're going to try to reveal more of that as we go along here through the summer. But I guess it's the switch thing from the Arctic to the hot zone. We're deep in both. I'll do a few more shout outs and then we're out of here. Fantastic. Jay Mallett, it's great to see you out there. There's a lot of Bitcoin fans, even, you know, it's interesting because I think all of the different currencies are interesting and all the rest of it. But I'm going to tell you that I'm not going to be in a cult about a currency. Okay. So if somebody likes a currency, good, you know, that's good. Invest in it, make a profit with it, but let's not get culty about, you know, Bitcoin or anything else, because what happens is you see that played out over and over again, you know, and then there's a big drop and all the rest. It reminds me of when people were going nuts for dot-com stocks. You know, these are investments. These are ways of doing things, you know, and there's going to have to be a system at a certain point that's a more honest currency. There's no question about it. But I also want to be realistic. You know, this isn't a show that panders. I don't want to pander because people have built up this whole thing about different types of coins. I want to investigate it. You know, if people who are in the financial industry like Catherine Austin Fitz don't trust those types of digital currencies, there's a reason for it. And we need to examine that and have a pretty open conversation about it. It's also interesting. I think it's very important that we don't get extreme. And, you know, this happens in a lot of things. I want to really say that so many of you share fascinating things with me. And whether that relates to diet or holistic things or whatever, I get so much from it. But what's interesting to me also, when I'm seeing information transferred in the world, I think we have to be very careful about extremes, because you see people on one hand over here saying, oh, you know, you have to eat all meat. If you don't eat all meat, then, you know, you're a goner. And then there are other people over here who say, you could never eat meat. If you eat meat, you're the Antichrist, you know, and you should be vegan or whatever. It's not, look, balance, individuality, things that we can discover together. That's the way that these things can work the best, in my opinion. And I'm excited that anyone's excited about any particular thing, but we have to really, you know, things get culty real fast in certain circles. And I've noticed that with information too. So I think what we want to do, one of the things I'd like to kind of leave you with tonight is, for me, this is really the heart of dark journalism, is have the ability to exchange ideas in an open fashion and get to undisputable, undeniable truths about different types of things, and taking a lot of different points of view into account. That for me is a real achievement. And I think we're on our way to doing this, which is why I appreciate the Ideas Room so much, because there's so many intelligent people out there. And I really appreciate the impact that they have on me as well. So this is a conversation. I think this is the kind of conversation that people like the Davos crowd like to shut down, because, you know, we have that depth and we have that back and forth. And when they were trying to keep people, you know, don't walk within 6 feet of each other and all the rest, I was instantly saying, yeah, you can't have those deep conversations. That's part of the thing that they needed to avoid. They needed that data point. So as the people in Australia understood quite well and were very bravely got through. So absolutely fantastic feedback. And I look forward to really hearing more from you guys. When we get to this bigger piece about the hot zone, I'm going to want as much feedback as you guys can give me. Fantastic. And Groovy, it's great to see you out there. Thanks so much. A couple more shout outs before I go. I can't resist. Golden Girl, thank you. Beautiful, wise words as always. Thank you, Mark. Really appreciate that. You guys, I've been reading through the Ideas Room transcripts after the shows, wow. Just absolutely incredible. So really appreciate that. Esoteric Gold, Wolf Mother, Sunny Rosario Trujillo. Hello from Dallas. Well, you're right there at the scene of the crime. Did you get over to Dealey Plaza? A friend of mine was there recently and said, time stands still. I think that's a really good description. Gigi Young. It's fantastic to have Gigi out there doing incredible work. I highly recommend you check out her new series and Dealing with Mars. This thing is off the charts and it's so well produced and so well put together. And of course, Gigi and I have a good surprise coming up for you this summer as well. All I can say is get your baseball hats on for that one. Let's see. Frank Monday. Good to see you, sir. El Barto, Taylor Green. Esther Young, there's Gigi. It's great to have you out there. Fantastic. Black Zionist, Scarlet Fire, Vicky Bear, Vicky Brown Bear. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And to all those who gave us super chat support tonight as well. I'll get that list. I don't have it right here in front of me, or I'd shout y'all out right now, but thank you so much. Your support makes all the difference for the work that we do in this program. We are going to be back at you next week. And we'll have something very special for you. There may be some special reports in the meanwhile, because there's so much going on. But with everything going on, we know that we're in a cycle of accelerated change, and we need the most sound voices and the clearest heads that we can bring forward. And we try to do that here for you on this show. Deborah Blair, it's great to see you out there. Danielle Jorgensen, Mark Gernon, have a good night, DJ. Thank you very much. We will see you all next week. And thank you for making it a great night with us. So, you know, it says end broadcast, but after all, you know, it never really ends. You might think it's going to end, but after all, have a great night, everyone.